Next case is Global Knowledge Training versus Tax Commissioner Richard Levin. Mr. Sussman.
Thank you. Chief Justice Brown, Justices of the Court, may it please the Court. My name is William Sussman. I'm with Ropes & Gray, and I'm here this morning on behalf of the appellant, Global Knowledge Training, LLC, which I'll refer to as Global. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is an appeal from a decision by the BTA imposing use tax and interest on Global based on training courses that Global offered to its Ohio customers in the use of computer hardware and software. This appeal centers on revised code 5379.01Y1B, and in particular, its training provision, which says that the statute only taxes training of computer programmers and operators, which the applicable regulation says is limited to, in the words of the regulation, instructing computer programmers and operators in the use of computer equipment and its system software. No other training is taxed under the statute. So we say that the decision of the BTA should be reversed on the several constitutional and statutory grounds that we discuss in our briefs, but given the time limits this morning, I plan to focus my argument on our claim that the statute on its face imposes a content-based tax on protected speech and thus violates the rights under the First Amendment and the Ohio Constitution to free speech.
Well, did you raise that issue below?
We did not raise that issue below, Your Honor, and under this Court's decision in Cleveland Gear, as we discuss in our reply brief, we were not required to do so. I'm actually glad Your Honor brought that up because it's one of the points I intended to raise. The government disputes the nature of our free speech claim. The government says that the Court lacks jurisdiction over that claim because, in the government's view, it is not what they call a purely facial challenge, but rather an as-applied challenge that we were required to raise before the BTA. But Cleveland Gear makes clear that that is not correct because what our claim is a facial challenge, because to resolve it, the Court need only look to the language of the statute, the language of the implementing regulation, and test that against the governing case law to determine whether or not the statute survives. There's no need and there's no occasion, frankly, for this Court to consider what the Court called in Cleveland Gear extrinsic facts, such as the specifics of any of Global's training courses. The Court need only address three pure questions of law. First, is training in computer programming and operation protected speech under the First Amendment? Second, does the statute impose a content-based tax on that protected speech? And third, does the statute fail strict scrutiny? In answering those questions, it's the language of the statute and the regulation that are the sole focus of analysis. So we believe and ask the Court to conclude that our free speech claim is a facial challenge. And
isn't it necessary for this Court even to consider the type of facial challenge that you're suggesting to take a look at the regulations and the administrative practices of the tax commissioner?
Well, I think, Your Honor, that, again,
and isn't that the kind of extrinsic evidence that would preclude our consideration?
Oh, no, Your Honor. The Supreme Court in the County of Forsyth case, the Supreme Court of the United States in the County of Forsyth said that the Court must consider the implementing regulation, which explains how the statute is being construed by the DOT. But again, that this is something that simply makes the content-based nature of the statute and its taxation more clear. If you look at the language of the statute, and let me point to that. The key word is training. Okay, the statute says that it taxes training of computer programmers and operators. The key word here, as I said, is training. Webster's Dictionary itself, I mean, we're talking about plain meaning now, and it's in Reply Appendix B. It's behind our reply brief, the definition. Webster's Dictionary tells us that to train someone is to teach or instruct them in their profession or occupation. So to train computer programmers and operators is to teach or instruct them in computer programming and operation. The statute thus inherently limits the taxable training to instruction with that content. The statute only taxes training with that content. Training with any other content is not taxable under the statute. And if the statute said that it taxes training of lawyers or training of doctors, I don't think there'd be any doubt that what the statute would be getting at would be taxing instruction whose content is law or medicine. It's the same thing here. Training of computer programmers and operators is training them in their profession, and that is computer programming and operation. Now, it's a long way of answering the Court's question about the regulation, but I did want to tee that up this way, because the regulation simply serves to confirm the content-based approach of the statute. It's not extrinsic evidence. I mean, it's a point of law. And the regulation explains that the word training, that the very key word in the statute, means, in the words of the regulation, instructing computer programmers and operators in the use of computer equipment and its system software. Nothing else. It's very clearly a content-based approach, which is inherent in the word training in the statute and is clarified by the language of the regulation. So by its terms, what the statute does, and this is why it violates the First Amendment and the Ohio Constitution, is the statute imposes what the Supreme Court of the United States and Simon & Schuster called a financial burden, that is a tax, only on protected speech of a particular content, that is training in computer programming and operation, which the regulation clarifies to mean is instruction in the use of computer equipment and its system software. And what that means is that the Ohio tax authorities necessarily have to look at the content of any given training course in order to determine whether its content is taxable under the statute, and that is the very essence of the test for content-based taxation under the United States Supreme Court's decisions. In order to, if you need to look at the content of speech in order to determine whether it's subject to a law, then that law is content-based, and that is what drives the strict scrutiny analysis here, and that's what makes the statute subject to strict scrutiny and on its face.
So if the statute said all training of any kind is subject to the tax, it passes the test. It would be constitutional.
It would not face a problem under the free speech clause of the First Amendment and the comparable clause of the Ohio Constitution content-based.
If we were to regard the statute as taxing certain types of training with respect to computers, that is the usage and the application of them, but not to tax training of folks who design the programs that drive the computers, that would run afoul of the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution, in your view.
If I'm understanding the Court's question, it would be a different content-based approach. I mean, the statute that we're talking about here obviously focuses on the word training of computer programmers and operators, and that's why, because the word training necessarily talks about instructing people in their profession or occupation, training of computer programmers and operators means the content is training in computer programming and operation. If Your Honor's question, I think it talks about a different type of content-based training. And as long as the statute is looking, is written in a way that on its face, the taxing authorities would have to look at the content of the speech in order to determine whether or not it's subject to the tax, it runs afoul of the First Amendment in the Ohio Constitution. So it would be a different statute with a different problem. If Ohio were to say, in answer to, I think, the beginning of your question, that all training of any kind, regardless of content, is subject to tax, I think that would be, if the political will were to impose something like that in the General Assembly, I think that would avoid the content-based problem that we have with this statute on its face, because there, by definition, you're not looking at the content of the statute.
Mr. Sussman, if we accept your argument that this is a facial challenge that need not have been raised below, would we not have to send this case back to the BTA to allow the commissioner to defend the statute on grounds that it was rationally tailored to meet your concerns?
No, Your Honor. That would not be a viable option. if the statute on its face imposes a content-based tax, and therefore our position is that it is facially invalid. If the statute is facially invalid, it's struck down on its face. There's nothing to send back to the BTA. You know, the BTA raises some points in its brief saying that there are facts that the court needs to look at. But the whole point of Cleveland Gear, I submit, is that extrinsic facts are not needed and they're not relevant to determine whether or not a statute is unconstitutional on its face. That's the whole point of facial invalidity. And as far as the rational relation is concerned, the Supreme Court has made it very, very clear in the number of cases that we cite in our brief, Simon and Schuster, Arkansas Writers, and lower courts around the country, that a content-based tax is subject to strict scrutiny. There is nothing to send back under rational relation in any event, and the government concedes in its brief, without saying so explicitly, that they fail strict scrutiny. The only thing that the government can try to muster is they say the statute bears a reasonable relation to a governmental purpose. That's on page 35 to 37 of their brief. But strict scrutiny is the test here. So if you agree with us that the statute on its face imposes a content-based tax on protected speech, which we think is pretty clear from the law, then that's the end of the analysis because it drives you to the conclusion that facially it is subject to strict scrutiny, and it cannot survive strict scrutiny, as the government itself essentially concedes.
Your argument is intriguing, but doesn't the state have a right to demonstrate that the regulations it's imposed fit a compelling state need? And don't they have the right to build a record on that?
Well, but again,
haven't you deprived them by coming here where they can't?
I think, again, the point, Your Honor, is that we're making a facial challenge. And under a facial challenge, the court only looks at the statute and the regulation. And I want to make it clear that we're not talking about striking down the regulation. We're talking about striking down the training provision of 5379.01y1b itself. The regulation clarifies it, but the problem with the statute is inherent in the word training. That's the key word. And because, as I explained, hopefully satisfactorily, that training of computer programmers and operators drives you to the content-based nature of the statute. So there is nothing to send back to the BTA for a record. And I think the whole point of Cleveland Gear is in distinguishing between the as-applied and the facial is if we're doing a facial analysis, there are no extrinsic facts used in the analysis itself. I hope I've satisfied the court on the jurisdictional question because that's obviously the key gating issue to get us to the merits. And I think there's really not very much more for me to say. I'm down into my rebuttal time. Unless the court has questions on any of the points that I've raised or any points I haven't raised, I'm happy to sit down and do it on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Clifford.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court, Damian Clifford here on behalf of the Tax Commissioner. It appears that Global Knowledge is readily conceding on the merits they lose. I mean, they're spent maybe 20 pages of a 60-page brief on the merits because they realize that this Court's statutory limit in reviewing decisions of the BTA is to determine whether the decision is reasonable and lawful. And, you know, the BTA in this instance looked through thousands of pages of documents, had over 100 pages of hearing testimony, many exhibits, and reached the conclusion that the equipment at issue here, the routers and switches, constitute computer equipment or, at a minimum, constitute a part of a computer system. The statute imposes the tax on computer training made in conjunction with the sale, lease, or operation of computer equipment or its systems. That's what the statute says. Only the rule itself imposes the supposed content-based regulation, which I will get to. I just want to make sure I go through to amplify why the BTA decision was correct. Routers and switches are connected directly to computers, can only be accessed through computers, and set up that way. If you look at page 573 and 579 of the second sup, along with 639, 116, and 637, these are diagrams that indicate how routers and switches are connected directly to computers, how they're an integral part of a computer system and part of a computer network. Thinking about wireless internet connections. That's provided by a router, which is connected directly to a computer. To somehow claim that's not computer equipment is just ridiculous.
Well, so counsel, we seem to be partying in the night here. His whole argument is First Amendment. So could you get us there?
And I'm going to go there right now. Thank you, Your Honor. So which gets to this next point of the specification of error in the notice of appeal. Again, it appears that Global Knowledge concedes a minimum to the equal protection and the void for vagueness that their notice of appeal raised for the first time in this court as alleged facial challenge doesn't satisfy 57-1704. There's no mention of void for vagueness, and at a minimum, they mention the code or the section of the Constitution which references equal protection. But they don't say in any way the manner or extent in which there's an equal protection classification violation. Now, to get to the issue about the First Amendment, this clearly is an as-applied challenge. It's raised for the first time. This court has raised concerns about the extrinsic facts necessary. Let's just look at what is really necessary. This content-based distinction, there's five different parts of the case law that determines whether something actually is a content-based restriction. Those are, is it a general tax versus a specific tax? Is it applied to a member of the press? Does it affect a small segment of the same medium? Does the statute favor one competing interest over another, and is there suppression? Those are all issues to make that determination of whether it's content-based. Now, to say that you can make that without any facts is, again, ridiculous. This is clearly an as-applied challenge with regards to the First Amendment, with regards to equal protection, and with regards to the void for vagueness.
Well, the tax is applied, being applied here to what?
The tax is being applied to computer services under 5739.01.
Specifically what, though? What was the tax, the taxable event?
Sure. What happened was is that Global Knowledge goes to corporations in Ohio, sets up a lab environment where there's computers, there's routers, there's switches, and they allow these network administrators or other experts in the field to come in, learn how to configure networks so that computers can communicate with one another so that you have this environment. So it's the back-of-the-house operation. You know, to say a computer here like Justice Lanzinger has, what that is originally connected to in the back of the
when room. When they come, they bring hardware and instructors.
Correct.
And when they leave, they take the same hardware and instructors out the door.
Correct.
And so the taxable event is teaching.
It's the service, enumerated service for consideration.
It's teaching.
Well, it's instruction.
All right.
So the issue here becomes, you know, with regards to this content-based regulation, and I want to get to this. They're changing what is the content basis here. Originally, in their original brief.
Well, let me take you back to one issue that was raised. If we're going to talk about whether or not this tax violates the First Amendment, isn't this the place to do that rather than the BTA?
If it was truly a facial challenge that required no extrinsic facts, I would agree with you. However, it's not. Because the fact of their claim that this content-based regulation is the end-all, be-all determination is not true. If we look at Turner Broadcasting System, this is the most recent case that talks about alleged content-based restriction. Turner says, speaker-based laws demand strict scrutiny only when they reflect the government's preference for substance of what favored speakers have to say or aversion to what disfavored speakers have to say. This was decided in 1994. Simon & Schuster, their key critical case, 1991, 3 years before Turner Broadcast System. Leathers, 1991. Arkansas Writer Project, 1987.
I don't have those all committed in my mind, and I doubt my colleagues do, so help us out.
Simon & Schuster is a case where there was a tax imposed only upon a member of the press, not newspapers, and certain content-based magazines. Those would be trade magazines, sports magazines, and I believe it was religious magazines. The court, in its opinion, said, first of all, you're making the determination on content. Second of all, you're imposing it only upon a limited group of the same media, i.e. the press, and you're attempting to favor one aspect of speech over another. So
what was the taxable event in Simon & Schuster?
Simon & Schuster was a general sales tax imposed upon only a specific limited group of the same medium that applied not to other people in the same medium.
Can you be more precise?
Sure.
Exactly what did they tax?
It taxed only those entities that did not have that were not newspapers. It did not tax trade magazines.
Okay, I'm not interested in what they didn't tax. What did they tax? That's what I'm asking.
Well, it's not entirely clear as to the specific incidents, but they tax only a limited number of entities based upon the content of the press. You still don't get me.
No.
Okay.
Did they tax the sale of a newspaper or a magazine or a...
Correct. That is,
well,
that is
that's
correct.
Pretty easy to say, isn't it?
They struck the sales tax that exempted it only exempted newspapers, trade, religious, professionals, and sports magazines. They exempted those and taxed everything else. Well, evidently, those a court in Arkansas, those areas are a huge array of how many of sales provided in Arkansas. So what they're saying is only a limited number of entities of the press are taxed, while others are not. And the distinguishing between that is based upon whether it's a trade, religious.
What was the specific product that was being taxed? That's what I'm trying to find out.
Well, it'd be other magazines that did not have trade magazines, that were not sports magazines, that were not professional religious magazines. All the other entities would be taxed.
All right.
And
gotcha.
So what the court said is this is a tax imposed only upon a small segment of the same medium. That,
along with the fact that
it was content-based, caused a problem.
And your point here is all computer training is taxed.
All computer training is taxed, but also training with regards to if you have instruction from a health club, instruction from a sports club. 5739-01-B3-I-B3.
But if you have instruction from the state bar or the state medical association, not taxed.
Well, it's hard to say because you also have 5739-01-B1, which is if the instruction is incidental to the purchase of tangible personal property, it could be taxed. So just because there's only, say, four or five enumerated services doesn't mean that under B1 it's not also included as a taxable event. My point is here is that just because it's content-based is not the end-all, be-all. You know, we cite a case that specifically said that the fact that restriction is content-based alone cannot trigger strict scrutiny. There's this five-part analysis which was performed in Leathers and also was reaffirmed under TBS.
Take us through.
Sure. Is it a general tax or a specific tax? Here, 5739-01-B3 is a subset of 5739-01, which imposes sales and use tax upon the exchange of tangible personal property for consideration or a use of tangible personal property. Secondly,
so is it general or specific?
Well, we would say that it's a very general tax. Sales and use tax is applied to all industry across the state of Ohio. Secondly, it's not directed to a member of the press. These cases that are cited by Global Knowledge all rely heavily on press matters. Simon & Schuster is something where they're saying that the tax is imposed upon a criminal based upon a criminal writing a book about their previous transgressions, and the tax is imposed solely for the basis to take that money away from that criminal to give it to the victims. Well, sounds good, but it violates the First Amendment. See, these cases they rely upon all
So now we're getting to it. The Simon & Schuster case was about limited to taxing books written by criminals about their experience.
Correct. And it was a tax solely upon, it was a specially enacted tax solely upon criminals writing about their criminal history so that they could not profit. Yeah. Instead, the money went to the victims of crime.
Exceedingly limited, yeah. Okay.
Okay. So
it helped if you'd gotten there some time ago.
Right. Sorry, Your Honor. You know, I already touched on that it's not a member of the press. This is opposed upon computer training in general. It affects all segments of computer training. It's not levied upon same small segment of the same medium. They haven't presented anything where the tax is only upon Global Knowledge and not upon other computer industry. They've never provided anything that indicates that there's not tax on other training. We cite in our brief the other statutes to talk about training. And this leads to one of the final two points. It's not an intent of the General Assembly to suppress the idea of computer training. That also is a critical aspect of this. There's nothing in the record that indicates the General Assembly enacted Y1B, which is the definitional section, to strictly limit or inhibit the computer training in this issue or computer training in general. Instead, it was enacted in 1983 as part of the House budget bill at a time when Windows was in its infant stages.
Have we covered all five? You said there were five prongs to
well,
this.
Well, the last one, Your Honor, is there's no competing interest. Part of what they claim is that this is it's a tax on system software versus application software. They originally had that in their brief. They abandoned that in their reply brief. Something under American Fibers, this Court has said, is barred. But there's no competing interest. So to say the distinction between taxing system software versus application software, again, is a farce because system software is Windows or, if you're an Apple person, Snow Leopard. Application software is Word or Microsoft Office. So there's no competing interest between system software and application software. That was what they originally came was the basis of the First Amendment violation, the content-based regulation. Now they seem to concede that, no, it's only training, because they realize that, under our first prong, that's a as-applied challenge. We can't really make that in front of this court for the first time. So, you know, I see that I'm way past my time there, but as to the equal protection, there's no classification, and you know, I would ask that that the decision be affirmed, unless there's any other questions. No? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clifford. Mr. Sussman, you had reserved some time. You have 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I hardly know where to begin.
Mr. Sussman, why don't you begin with the five-part test?
Okay. Actually, I believe what Mr. Clifford was talking about was a four-part test under Leathers, and I'm surprised that he does it again today. We pointed out in our reply brief that what the government omitted from their brief was the fourth prong of Leathers, and let me read it to you. Finally, for reasons that are obvious, a tax will trigger heightened scrutiny under the First Amendment, that is strict scrutiny, if it discriminates on the basis of the content of taxpayer speech. That is a separate and independent basis for strict scrutiny, facial strike down of a statute, and that's what we're talking about here. Simon & Schuster says that a statute is presumptively inconsistent with the First Amendment if it imposes a financial burden on speakers because of the content of their speech.
But isn't this a universally applied tax for all similarly situated training institutions?
No, Your Honor. I think, again, I'm glad to have the chance to clarify what just occurred here. Our only focus is 5379.01y1b. There were a lot of other statutory sections that were thrown around here. All of the tax in this case was imposed on Global Knowledge under 5379.01y1b. That's clear on the first page of the tax commissioner's final determination that led to the BTA. It's in the record. That's the only statute that we're talking about here. So all this other stuff is for another day and another appeal. What 5379.01y1b does is tax training of computer programmers and operators.
For everyone who offers that training, not just your client. Every business that's similarly situated to Global, no matter what type of training they're providing for these operators or programmers, they all have to pay this tax.
I would think that's correct. I don't have any idea what Global's competitors are or aren't doing, but the point is that the content-based nature of the tax is inherent in the word training with respect to computer programmers and operators. That drives the tax to only tax training of computer programming and operation.
What's its competing? What doesn't get taxed that is taxed by this alleged content-driven tax? What other services provided by your client or competitor don't get taxed?
All our client does is offer training in computer hardware and software. All our client was taxed under here was 5379.01y1b. That is the entire universe of this court's need to look at facial invalidity of the statute. The content of the training that is subject to this particular statute is limited to training of computer programmers and operators, which, as I said, under Webster's, is training with a very specific content, computer programming and operation, nothing else in the universe.
And that's your objection, is that the training of lawyers, the training of doctors, the training of electricians, the training of brick masons is not subject to tax.
Not subject to tax under this statute, Your Honor. That's exactly right. And so on its face, you have to look at the content of the training to determine whether or not it's subject to the tax.
Are there other sections that would tax some of those activities that Justice Pfeiffer just referenced?
I frankly have not, as Mr. Clifford evidently has, committed much more of the Ohio tax code to memory. But I do know that, you know, the idea that that there are other possible statutes that might hypothetically be applicable to anything that my client does, that's another appeal for another day.
Well, let's forget about what your client does. But if there's tax sections that will tax the training of electricians, using Justice Pfeiffer's, would you argue that that would be similarly situated to the position you find Global in?
Yes, I would, Your Honor.
So you say that there's no tax that can be levied on a trade school or a training course for electricians?
I would say, Your Honor, that if the statute said, as this one does, with respect to computer programming and operation, that the tax reaches training only of electricians or masons or anything else, that is the problem. If you have to look at the content of the training, which is protected speech under the First Amendment, there's no debate about that. If you have to look at the content of the training to determine whether or not it's
training is also a service, and this is a service tax. Again, we're not even looking at whether it's good training or not. We don't care what the content of the training is or whether it's up to date, whether it's obsolete, whether they're getting their money worth or whatever. It's a service. And that is the focus of this tax section, is on services provided, not content, validity, quality, or any other configuration of the services.
No, I think the word content is the problem here, perhaps, that I'm not communicating. The content of the training, whether it's good training, bad training, and different training, the content of the training subject to the statute is training in computer programming and operation, okay? So if it's that particular content, and there's no doubt that's protected speech, then it is subject to the tax. If it is training in anything else in the universe, it's not subject to tax under this statute. And that's the problem. You have to look at the content of the training in order to determine whether or not it's training in computer programming and operation or any other type of training. 5379-01-Y1B, which is the only statute we're here on today, it's the only statute that's involved, that is limited to content-based training.
Although, Mr. Sussman, really what you're citing, the Y-1B, is actually computer services. That is the statute. It isn't training. It says computer services, and then it goes on to say, meaning providing services consisting of specifying computer hardware configurations, evaluating technical processing, computer programming, and training of computer programmers, et cetera. So, I mean, when you say Y-1B was talking about training, it's your interpretation, but it's really computer services.
I should correct, okay. Your Honor, the focus here is on the training provision of 5379-01-Y1B. That's the only thing that was involved here. That's all we do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sussman.
Thank you, Your Honor.